leading with vision. And I thought this children lesson fit very well, because none of us want to walk the path all alone. None of us. It's so good to be a part of a church brotherhood where we all pull together and build conviction together. But unless we take our work individually, we will greatly compromise what God is looking for from one generation to the next. The title, Fathers Leading with Vision, and the word lead means to guide on a way, especially by going in advance. You lead by going there first yourself. And vision, I found the definition that I liked. It said unusual discernment or foresight, because it means you see what's coming or what you're going to meet down the road and you get ready for that. Now, that's not on your paper, but that is a title and that's some of the definitions I found. I'm going to stick pretty closely to this, but it's pretty hard for me just to stick with the text that's written down, and you're certainly welcome to keep your hand out or turn it back in, whichever way. I was given the, what's in the little box there, that was sent to me, and I don't know if the rest of the subjects, they got it or not, but Brother Lyndon Martin, I believe it was, took the summary of the Bible school committee, and this is what I was told. Fatherhood is under assault. Society revolts against authority. In fact, this is the lawlessness of this generation. The Bible talks about, because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. The word iniquity, the Greek word is anomia, and it means without law. And we see that, don't we? I mean, all around, you just see a lot more without law all the time. Feminism attacks biblical headship, and that led me to look up feminism. That's the first point down there. And I have that included in the text here. Children accuse even godly fathers of emotional abuse. And I don't want to run down this subject too much. I can really rant on that because, you know, we live in a victim society, and it's really popular to find something to complain about. I finally figured out what's wrong with my childhood. I finally figured it out. I was a victim of a perfect home. I mean, we lived in a wicked city, and I had a perfect father and a perfect mother, and I had to act perfectly, and that's a perfect environment to raise a hypocrite, you know? So I just couldn't help being a hypocrite when I grew up. Is that okay? You know, when you stop and think about it, I don't want to make too much fun over that, but it is really something that you think about. And so fathers hesitate to stand up, obey the Bible, and lead their homes. How can fathers develop biblical vision for their homes? And that's the core of what we want to talk about tonight. How should they order their homes and help their children build convictions? How does servant leadership look for the earnest father? And I'm not sure that I really answered that question good enough, but it is part of a question, a lesson like this. And so we have two verses, one from the Old Testament, one from the New, about Abraham. For I know him that he will command his children and his household after him. We just studied this in Sunday school. And they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. I've been so impressed. My wife and I just got done reading through the Old Testament prophets all the way to the end of the Bible. By the way, this year I actually got three of my Bible reading records back again. We have these little things that we give out, and we say we'll give a certificate if you send them back. I actually got three this year at the end of the year, which was about two more than what I usually get. I was so happy for three. I don't know how many we gave out, but I was so happy for the few that we got back. But the Old Testament and in the New Testament too is God is looking for people who do what's right, who practice justice and judgment. And then in the New Testament, the qualification for a church leader is one that ruleth, and the word Greek word there means stands before and practices it, ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. And then the next verse says, for how are you going to take care of the church of God if you don't rule your own house? And it's two different words. Obviously, taking care of is a heavy thing to do, but it's not the same kind of force that rule takes. And so we have more. We're looking for more from our fathers than what we look for from our church leaders. But you have to do it at home first, or you won't do it at church. Now I've divided this into four questions. Number one, what are the pressures of our age? Number two, what does God's word teach us? And then three, what is the Christian's path forward? And then a little bit of a summary. And so we're going to just follow that kind of an outline and look at it as we go along. What are the pressures of our age? The following is an excerpt taken from Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia. It helps us understand some of the pressures of our day by what society says about themselves. And what they paint is what they think is just so wonderful about our society. And I'm continually impressed with how that, if the older you get, the more you worry about where things are going, you know, the more you think about inflation, the older you get, because you see what money used to be worth and what it is today. But not just that. And I know I grew up in the Bible Belt, but we knew one couple that was divorced and remarried. Our neighbor, Mr. Jeffers, had left his wife, and I ended up with his second wife as my geometry teacher. And that was we prayed for them, because all up and down the road, we prayed for all of our neighbors, but all the rest of them had the same husbands and wives. I mean, you just didn't divorce and remarry, but they did. But look at that today, where that is. It is a totally different situation. Well, when you read some of the topics of today's news, it is very, frightening, and I'm going to read this now what it says. Feminism is a range of socio-political movements and ideologies that aim to define and establish the political, economic, personal, and social equity of the sexes. In other words, there's no difference between male and female. Feminism holds the position that societies prioritize the male point of view. Men have an advantage, and that women are treated unjustly in these societies. Efforts to change this include fighting against gender stereotypes and improving educational, professional, and interpersonal opportunities and outcomes for women. It started a lot, and well, it goes back to the 18th century, which is the end of the 1700s. But if you come to World War I and II, there was a huge change as women went off to work while men went to war. Originating in the late 18th century Europe, feminist movements have campaigned and continue to campaign for women's rights, including the right to vote, run for public office, work, earn equal pay, own property, receive education, enter into contracts, have equal rights within marriage and maternity leave. Feminists have also worked to ensure access to contraception, legal abortion, social integration, and to protect women and girls from sexual assault. Now, some of these are good. This is definitely a priority here. Sexual harassment and domestic violence, all of those are, it's only fair for women to be protected from those things. Changes in female dress standards and acceptable physical activities for females have also been a part of feminist movements. Many scholars consider feminist campaigns to be a main force behind major historical societal changes for women's rights, particularly in the West, where they are near universally credited with achieving women's suffrage, which means the right to vote, gender-neutral language, reproductive rights for women, including access to contraceptives and abortion, and the right to enter into contracts and own property. Although feminist advocacy is and has been mainly focused on women's rights, some argue for the inclusion of men liberation within its aims, because they believe that men are also harmed by traditional gender roles. Feminist theory, which emerged from feminist movement, aims to understand the nature of gender inequality by examining women's social roles and lived experiences. Feminist theorists have developed theories in a variety of disciplines in order to respond to issues concerning gender. And this is about the first half, and I just stopped copying because I didn't want it to take up too much room. But the pressure is here, and somebody has said that if the wind blows, it moves the curtains in the church. And you often see the impact of first liberal churches, but then even conservative churches become influenced by these things, and there are changes made in home life and structure, and things become accepted that were never accepted before. Well, I have 7 points about what does God's word teach us, and we would like to just use that as an anchor for our thinking, And number one is, it was divine will that chose to create us male and female, each in his likeness. A woman is in the image of God, just like a man. He made us separate genders, and our gender goes to the core of our being. Every cell in your body indicates whether you're male or female, and it affects everything for the rest of your life. The fact that we are either male or female is not contractual, but creational. In other words, our gender is established by divine decree, not by our personal or social construct. We cannot renegotiate our gender as we might reschedule an appointment or refinance a mortgage. God created us, and we are his creatures, both men and women. Having been created male and female, we all begin as sons or daughters, become brothers or sisters, then move on to be husbands and wives, and may become fathers and mothers. Maybe husbands and wives, and maybe fathers and mothers, but we're still what we are. These roles are God-made, run to the core of our being, and influence our relationship in countless ways. And that's Bible. We understand that. Number two, God created man first and instructs him to lead in the relationship. And so I have three verses here. First one is 1 Corinthians 11:3-8-9. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ. The head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. And yet he goes on to say that you need both or there wouldn't be either. If we don't have both, there wouldn't be either of us. We know that. 1 Timothy 2 says, let the woman learn in silence with all subjection, but I suffer not a woman to teach nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. Now, this is primarily in the church setting, but it also talks something about, well, listen to the rest. For Adam was first formed, then Eve, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression. There are fundamental differences in the way we reach decisions. What leads us to the decisions that we have, and men should not be ashamed for taking responsibility of making decisions. What you think the facts are being, and sorry, ladies, I'm not in any way negating the value of women, but we just don't always think alike. It's fun to listen to men talk, and that's a woman for you. But then sometimes I hear the women say, but that's a man for you, you know. We're just different, okay? And it's the way God made it. Okay, I said I had three here, but I think I had one twice, and I only have two. Sorry about that. God gave Adam instruction about the forbidden fruit and held him responsible for their mutual disobedience. It's fascinating to me, if you really look closely at Genesis chapter 3, Adam was there the whole time. He was with her. He saw her Eve being deceived by the devil. He knew that she was being deceived, and he didn't say anything. He was silent. He was just quiet. And then when she ate, nothing happened. So she gave the fruit to him, but when he ate, the fall happened. It was because he went along with what she led him to do. God held him accountable, and so that we can blame the woman, but we understand that it was God's punishment on it's the consequence of what happened when the man partook of the fruit. Together, number three, the man and the woman are to exercise dominion over God's creation in companionship and partnership. God gave the newly created genders responsibility to, number one, take dominion over the rest of creation, both natural and living. Two, be fruitful and multiply, and to multiply and bearing offspring to fill up the earth. And number three, subdue the rest of his created world. The duty to subdue creation and continue the patterns of creation through procreation brings sobering likeness and accountability to the Creator. One of the most fascinating things that you only think about as you get older is how that in marriage there comes children. And when children come up, grow older, and they have children, new personalities are formed that will last for all of eternity. And this is what God made the world for his fellowship and friendship, in the ages to come, and he allows married couples, he asks married couples to be a part of that ongoing, and we call it procreation, it's creation of new souls. It's not done without him, but it's something that he uses, and it's mind-boggling when you think about the impact and the exponential impact of this kind of a thing that he has put into place. Oh, so it's just so, yeah, it's really humbling when you stop and think about it. Now, number four, the fall into sin of Adam and Eve has greatly complicated who we are as men and women. God created us to synergize as men and women, each contributing essential blessing to each other. Sin complicates this prospect, but the gospel of Christ Jesus makes it possible again. We can be reconciled, even though we're very different, and the fall, immediately they start blaming each other. Whenever you're reconciled, the hearts of the father are turned toward their children, the children toward their fathers. Malachi said about John the Baptist's message, the beginning of the kingdom of God, the teaching that Jesus brought, and whenever they're reconciled, it brings a harmony together. We need to recognize the frustration and hurts that come between us as men and women are not the fault of our gender. It's not because she's a woman, but because I have a fallen nature and she has a fallen nature. And so we are different, intended to complement each other, and we end up complicating each other, you know? I don't see y'all smiling about this, but I guess you know what it is like. It's fascinating. This is something that we've been talking about lately, how that if any young couple that gets married knew what they're going to go through by getting married, they wouldn't do it. But we didn't know it, so we got married. And it's very, very wonderful as you work through those things. But it is very, and I'm so glad that we didn't blow apart, separate, or choose our own way, hung in there together. And, you know, it'd be kind of nice if you could start out at about 35 years of marriage right away. If you can't, you got to go through those other years too. And it's okay. It's okay. But it's something that is just fascinating how God blesses that as we choose to learn from each other and accept and relate to the differences of genders. Number five, God's way of relating to mankind changes in various dispensations, but the role of genders remains constant. The created roles of male and female cannot be improved upon. From the peace of the Garden of Eden, through the Old and New Testaments, and into the terrible time of the day of the Lord, and may I get away with saying it here? That even in the millennium, this is going to continue. My wife and I just read about how that there's going to be children playing in the streets describing the millennium and the peace that's at Jerusalem again. That there will be little children playing in the streets. I believe they will be born in that period of time, and men and women will have that role. No, not the people who have the resurrected bodies, because there's neither male nor female. And how that all happens, I don't understand. But the Bible gives a consistent pattern of male-female relationships. All right, number six. Godly men and women are to teach and show God's design to those they live among and the rising generation. God's way is for husbands to lead their wives, fathers to lead out in family life, fathers to teach and be examples to their sons in God-honoring masculinity, and for mothers to exemplify virtue and homemaking to their daughters in God-honoring femininity. Godly homes become a stable influence and resource in a chaotic society. I just wish that we could just carry that away, the treasure. And what I said facetiously about being raised in a perfect home at the beginning, I hope you understand that. But, you know, when you look back at a home where there was peace, where there was pulling together, where each took their role, and problems were worked through, solutions were achieved, you can just thank the Lord for that, because it's a chaotic world where human nature is just left run into conflict and the terrible things that happen. I don't know. It seems like you hardly, yeah, it's just the stories of murder, suicide, and just on and on and on. Where family structures are fractured, we need to fill in the gap so children and youth can see and feel the peace and beauty of functional home relationships. Are our churches truly helping those whose homes or marriages reflect broken relationships? That's a question that I would put out, because that's the goal. And if that's not the goal, then the message of John the Baptist and of Jesus Christ has not been accepted, of brokenness and of acknowledging our sinfulness and coming and experiencing the new birth in Jesus Christ. Number 7. The cultural trends of our age show man's deep-seated rebellion against the Creator and the tragedy of broken role models. Present trends of open or broken marriages, same-sex relationships, or transgenderism are the result of man rejecting his Creator, and the Bible prophesies it in Romans 1. Mankind thinks they are authoring a better way of liberation, but all they are doing is falling into the snare of Satan, the evil one. And it's so sad. But we're not here just to decry how terrible it is. But these are some principles, 7 points, and you could find more than this. But what is our Christian's path forward? Well, I have 3 statements. Fix your goal. And this came to me in a little sermon. That's why I put it in here. The whole sermon was these 3 points. Fix your goal, fill your role, and feed your soul. Okay? You got that? Fix your goal. Where you want to end up? Now, you fill your role today, but make sure you feed your own soul or you'll never be able to carry this out. And so in those 3 little points is what we're going to focus on the rest of the way through. Fix your goal. One of the more sober realities gleaned from Jesus' teaching are the lessons learned from life's exit scenes. Every person leaves this life for an eternal, unchanging destiny and reward. You are going to die someday, and when you die, you will go to a destiny. But before you get there, you will be given a reward of one kind or another. And it will be different depending on the kind of investment that you made, that we made while we are here. If you even give a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple, you will receive a reward for that. But if you have a bad attitude, or if you, all through lifetime, you are investing in something that you will be rewarded for, either in blessing or it will be a curse to you. Of all of these, one of the most sobering accounts is found in Luke chapter 12. In this passage, Jesus teaches us the Son of Man will call his servants, his stewards, into account for how they aligned and lived out their values with his own. Jesus' values, God has values, and he wants, as the master and the one who made the whole universe, he wants you to embrace the things that are important to him and make them important to yourself. And if you did, you will be rewarded for that. But if you didn't, it doesn't matter what church or denomination you belong to. If you didn't embrace those values and make them, you weren't his steward. You're not his servant. And there are 3 classes. Number 1, there are servants who did not know their master's will. They are not given excuse, but are assigned an eternity without Christ. If they didn't know their master's will, they can't go to heaven. It's terrible. Number 2, I'll save that one for last. Number 3, there's a tragic group that heard their master's call, understood his will for their lives, but they failed to direct their own passions and habits. Jesus warns that not only will they be rejected from his kingdom, but they will endure eternity beaten with many stripes. Oh, it's horrible. One of the worst things you can do is be born in a Mennonite home and be raised and do the pretend Christian thing, but really embrace worldly values and go out into eternity and get the worst beating of anybody. The worst place in hell is not for Hitler. The worst place in hell is for people who were raised knowing full well what their master wanted, and they did not embrace that. They lived their lives selfishly. That's what the Bible teaches us. Tonight, which one are we headed for? Where are we going? Number 2, there are servants who knew their master's will and abandoned their own goals and purposes in order to do his will. They lived in dedicated devotion, intentionally denying their own dreams in order to make the master's priorities their own. They received great reward. That's something we don't talk about very much. I remember teaching this in Bible school, Pilgrim Bible School. We about had a rebellion in the class. So I went and told one of our congregations about this. And the men's group just about, Oh, that's selfish. If you're trying to serve the Lord today because you want a bigger reward in heaven, that's selfishness. No, brother, it isn't. That's why you go to work every day to get a paycheck, right? And the reason why you should live your Christian life according to these principles, the New Testament values, is because you want the reward that Jesus will give you. So today you deny yourself. You take up your cross. You don't live out the American Mennonite dream, okay? Does that make sense? You say no to that because you know souls are more important than the money that you might be able to make. And so you order your life accordingly. We have sober Bible illustrations of fathers with divided goals. Two of them are Old Testament. Oh, I guess all of them are. Who was the father whose desire for the well-watered plain led him to live in a perverted environment that totally compromised his family and righteous legacy? That's Lot. Now here's where my mistake is, the last question here. The second one, who was the priest of God who could not tell his appetite no, and when his sons made themselves vile, he restrained them not? Who is that? Huh?
Eli,
that's right. Now the last one I got messed up on because I thought it was Ammon, and I was confusing two of the stories. Who was the king whose distracted attention kept him from restraining his son Ammon? But the Bible doesn't say it. It says it about Adonijah and the son's lust. That one, Ammon's lust ruined him and some of his siblings' lives, and Adonijah got himself killed because of it. Sorry, I made a mistake there, and I'll have to fix that. Each one of us has basic goals that motivate us. We need to ask ourselves this question. Are the goals I have for my life the ones that Jesus has placed me at Elm Street in 2024 with the family, with the people in my life? Are the purposes that he has laid on my shoulder, the reason he sends me into this setting, the reason he gave me the home to grow up in that he did, the cousins that I have, the family that I have, am I living out those goals that he has for me? Now, the word fix your goal, can have two meanings. Let's use both. One is to establish or set. We need to seek our master's values and then set ourselves to live for him. When our goal is fixed, we will not be double-minded. We will not live out of reaction. We will live with intention. And one of the things they talk about is the airplane flying, you know, and they know where they want to go, but if they would just get off a little bit, they could end up far, far, far away from where they wanted to be if they didn't have some way to keep them on track for the goal that was set. Now, the other meaning is to repair. When something is broken, then we fix it. Have I allowed my goals in life to drift away from Jesus' kingdom? Maybe I'm bitter about something or feel like I did not have a good role model, so I cop out of leading in my home. This is extremely dangerous because of eternity. Maybe I yield to the temptation to waste time on my technology just because we can scroll a little longer. What am I doing with my life? Is it the goal that he has for me? Let's repair it if we need to. Why is it important to fix our goals? Other people can see where we are headed better than we ever can. When others see pretended devotion for Christ, but intentional devotedness for money or pleasure or whatever, you can fill in the blank, it tends to normalize these carnal goals. When the whole church has carnal goals, after a while, the young people say, well, they're chasing that, so I may as well this too. And we would like to make more rules so our children can't go into extreme sports when they can tell we plainly have our goal to make a bunch of money. And neither one of them are Bible. Which one is worse? Extreme sports or pleasure and recreation? Or to have a big pile of money whenever we die? Which one is better? The only goals that we can have are the ones that he wants us to have. And then they will see that and they will pick that up. Remember, we all tend to follow the flow or the norm much more than we like to admit. Remember the rich man that Jesus described a few chapters later in Luke? He wasn't even a bad, immoral man. How many wives did he have? The rich man and Lazarus. Only problem was he was selfish. Today he is being beaten with many stripes. and will forevermore. His desire to have a good influence on his brothers came too late, and very likely they have joined him in his miserable existence because he did it and it was normal. You know, that passion to live a life of devotedness for Jesus Christ could have influenced his brothers. All right, fill your role. The second point, after you fix your goal, are you really, really determined to serve the Lord, whatever it costs you? Then fill your role. If you're a married man, a father in a home, then you're called to the role of husband and father. We are called to lead our homes in establishing convictions, leading out in spiritual worship, helping our family make it a priority to win souls for the kingdom. There is no legitimate excuse to avoid taking your God-given responsibility. Oh, but I did not have a good example, you say. Well, we're going to pick that up a little later when we talk about the child at home. Procrastination and then crisis management, making decisions on the spur of the moment, are very likely your worst enemies. Do not be afraid to receive counsel from your helpmeet and from your sons and daughters. Talk about what our goal as a family ought to be. Then step up to the plate and lead out. Following are some practical areas to consider. Lead your wife in her emotional, spiritual journey. God created women to become emotionally involved with the needy and hurting around them. She may need some guidance from you, which may be given by sharing heart to heart and by praying together. You know, I'm just so fascinated by the way I saw my wife's heart just all wrapped up in the children. Of course, as they grow up, she kind of went through something when the children went back home to their homes and our house nest is empty again. But she's just caring so much about her mother. And this is on her mind all the time. And I love that. At the same time, I realize that there's some dangers in that. Now, she's got some, she's not here tonight because of knee problems and one thing or another, but I'm not saying she's not here because of being emotionally involved, but that's still a part of the journey. You never get done with your emotional journey and the need to communicate as husband and wife and to give direction to our wives as they work through their losses and things they're concerned about. And share your heart to heart and by praying together. Lead your family in regular, meaningful family worship. It is your responsibility to establish a spiritual atmosphere of the home. Consistency in family worship is a key, and while regular times of worship are demanding, they plant seeds that will bring a worthy harvest. You know, when you look back at that, you never regret the times that you intentionally just stopped everything else and had family worship. I lived in different homes, and I watched different times, and I'm just so grateful that, you know, that was just something that happened in our home. And then when I read the diaries, the settings, the history of my family, I so appreciated that that's exactly what happened, that both homes, my Ebersol and Stossfus ancestors, there was the bookcases in the living room that were lined up with songbooks and Bibles, because every day there was that time of family worship, of reading the Bible, singing together, praying together. It was just a part of life. Walk with your wife in working out consistent discipline. While you're present, it is your duty to correct irregularities. Remember, traits for leading a family, treasure them. That's your greatest treasure. Train when they're toddlers, train them to hearken, teach them the principles of life, transition to other authorities, to respect and to connect with other friends, trust, turn loose, and trade roles. I forgot to bring any paddles along, but I've got a lot of them. If any of you need paddles for your little ones, don't be afraid to ask, because they have that on them. And I probably have a couple hundred at home and another 300 that are coming as soon as they get finished engraved. So anyway, lead your family in maintaining a warm and loving home atmosphere. If you can receive correction and admonition, work in harmony with your spouse, then you can also insist that your children live in peace with their siblings. It is our nature to be contentious, but peace promotes righteousness. You can say, well, I got to prove I'm right, and so I can't take anything off of her or the children. They can't straighten me. Well, if you can never take correction, then you really aren't ever in a... If you rebuke a wise man, he will love you. If you rebuke a fool, he will hate you. Somebody who can't be told is really not in any place to try to lead a family. You have to be willing to accept, because we just don't just make mistakes. Sometimes we sin and need correction. Talk to your children about their personal world of interest. Children and youth are individuals with emotions and preferences. It requires your attention and time spent together for them to understand that you consider them and their development important. Speak with your sons about their moral development and give proper instruction for their age. Take the initiative to establish restrictive guidelines for technology privileges, especially work at helping them develop internal controls. And I know we would like to have the perfect, okay, we've got more technology than we ever had. And I'm all in favor of having restraints on our technology. But you know what? If a person has told himself the real fun is to see if I can get around all those restrictions and find something to feed my lust, then there's no controls going to stop him anywhere. I mean, there's always that top of the roof to go look over to the neighbor's fence, like David did, or, you know. And so there's a proper balance there, but the whole thing is to develop internal controls in a fallen world. Intentionally say positive things about your chosen brotherhood. You will need church family to anchor your youth. Anchor yourself someday. God did not intend when we all pull together. Look at what 12 cups did that three couldn't do. And I'm not saying that we should have a great big church, but we also need flee also youthful lust, but follow after righteousness, peace, godliness, with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart. It's God's plan that we're in this journey together with brotherhood. Are you the wife? Make sure you seize the role of being nurturer, of being a partner. When your husband asks you for advice, do not be afraid to share how you feel. When he makes a decision, do your best to make his judgment work out. You will never win the respect and devotion of your children nor the blessing of the Lord if you set yourself in sideways or against your husband's leadership. Shouldn't have married him in the first place if you couldn't trust him to be a leader. Girls, be very careful about who you marry. Make sure you talk to your parents about that. I know there's just something that happens. But if you get to the place where you're not listening to the advice of others, I know God joins people together. So sometimes, yeah, we have to let it there. Are you a child at home? Children need to respect and obey their parents. Your parents are not perfect. None are. Every child can grow up and tell himself he should have had better parents, but that won't bless you. Joseph and Daniel are examples of sterling character from needy settings. Choose to believe your Father in heaven loves you. That's one anchor point. And that he's giving you training in your home for a life of service to him. How are you going to understand dysfunctional people if you never have any dysfunctional people in your life? And if you're growing up under one and you see their needs, take it to the Lord and forgive them. You'll never get anywhere in life by holding a grudge. Theories of the impact of home atmosphere come and go. And there's always a new podcast and somebody explaining how that if you didn't get this when you were a child, then it results in this kind of warped personality or whatever. The Bible is steadfast in holding children responsible to make right choices in spite of failures of their parents. Are your parents godly and as upright as you could wish? Be thankful and follow in their steps. Are you able to see serious faults in your parents' leadership? Forgive them and then learn from that. Your Father in heaven knows what you are facing, and he can enable you to rise above generational weaknesses and failures. But take the Bible and look and read it and understand those principles, and let that be your guide in life. You meant it for evil, Joseph said, but God meant it for good. But what took him through all of that? Psalm says that the word of the Lord tried Joseph. God showed him what he wanted him to be, and Joseph kept his eyes on that goal and did not let his brothers take him off track. So fill your role. Now, feed your soul. The Bible does not divide people into categories of victimized or blessed. It only lays out the standard of choosing salvation and a living relationship with the Master for each one of us. I know some people don't have a fair upbringing, and some of us it was so good it's not fair. But the fact of the matter is we all have a human nature, and we're given a Bible that's to tell us how to live. When a person is spirit-filled, then the fruit of the Spirit will come out of his life. When he is carnal, then there will be envy and strife in every evil work. Life will always provide upsetting circumstances. Who is a wise man endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good way of life, conversation, everyday life, his works with meekness of wisdom. James 3:13. You can choose this kind of a life even if your home setting may have programmed you to a default setting of reaction and strife. You can be a leader in your home, men, even if you didn't see that. You can know what not to be if you saw the failures in your own home life. You may be wondering how. There is no shortcut for spiritual maturity and growth and maturity. It begins with intentionally seeking the kingdom of God through Bible reading, prayer, and meditation. Another avenue is memorization. When we make these traits a priority in our lives, we find ourselves growing into Christ's own likeness. But we all, with open face, beholding as in a glass the glory of the Lord, are changed into the same image. There's two verses that talk about looking at the Bible like a mirror. And in James, he says, if you look into there and you see yourself like a mirror, he says, don't go away and forget what manner of man you are. Realize that, you know what, I need to grow in this area. You see yourself. But Paul, to the Corinthians, says, this mirror is a way to look into eternity. Where are you going to be in the millennium? Where are you going to be when Jesus is reigning on the earth? And he wants to give you a resurrected body like he has now. Where are you going to be then? Are you going to shine in his kingdom like the stars forever and ever? Daniel talks about that. If you turn many to righteousness, you're going to shine as the stars forever and ever. Are you going to be that kind of a person because you cared about people now and you helped them to find their way? And that can be in your future. I don't know. I don't know what kind of life you're living, but it's a question. But we, beholding as in a glass the glory of the Lord, are changed into the same image from glory to glory. What shall we carry away? Our society is being deceived by the error of the wicked one. We dare not allow ourselves to buy into their delusion, or we will suffer their fate. God created us and will enable us to stand up and fill the calling he has for us. Every generation has had tests and has had faithful men. You and I, too, can be faithful today. Fathers leading with vision. Yes, the world is there, but you think about what the principles from God's word are. Fix your goal, fill your role, and feed your soul so you can live it out in everyday life. May God bless you as you seek to put this into everyday life.